This week on Triangulation, an old friend comes back. Trey Ratcliffe has a new book all about the bane of influencers on Instagram. Under the Influence, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Triangulation, episode 405, for July 5th, 2019. Trey Ratcliffe. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology, chew the fat for a little bit, spit it out, wrap it up in a ball and throw it at you. That's terrible. That's terrible. See what you do to me, Trey Ratcliffe? Trey Ratcliffe is my personal hero, one of the best photographers I've ever heard of, I've ever met. He is an amazing human being, even more importantly. And is on a journey through life that I can only press my nose against the glass of his window and admire. How about that for an introduction, Trey Ratcliffe?
That was awfully sweet. Thank you, sir.
It's all sincere because you're an amazing fellow. His new book, which is even more surprising and amazing, is called Under the Influence, How to Fake Your Way into Getting Rich on Instagram. And the reason I say it's amazing is because one of the paths we've all followed Trey Ratcliffe down is the path to greatness along the line of Google+, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You, more than almost anybody I know, took advantage of these social networks in a positive way.
Mm.
I remember you saying, I post a picture a day on Facebook. My best stuff I put on Google+ because it looks great. Of course, that was years ago when Google+ still existed. And Facebook wasn't a tool of the Russian government. So things have changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's an ever set of shifting sands that we're upon. You know, actually, I almost called the book How to Stay Zen on Social Media.
Oh, I like that.
A lot of the book is, you know, included in that subtitle, that hand grenade subtitle, Influencer Fraud, Selfies, Ego, Anxiety, and Mass Delusional Behavior.
Yeah.
And so this started out as a little article that Wired asked me to write, and then I ended up with just so much interesting data. And I realized, like, there's just so much undue anxiety out there, and I think I could do something to help reduce the suffering in the world. You know, I think it's tantamount among people that are able to help reduce suffering and anxiety in the world and make the world a more beautiful, conscious place full of love.
Well, you in the back, and it's actually in the book too, you say, for now, simply know that one who leads a perfect life has no need to tell anyone else because the telling does not increase its perfection. Did you say that or did the Dalai Lama say it?
What's the difference?
He would say there is no difference.
Yeah, no, I kind of came up with that while I was writing the book. And
it's deep.
You know, I think a lot of it was prompted by you jump on Instagram and you see all these people leading the perfect life.
Yeah.
And it's either just basically an egoic thing or it's based on a false narrative where a lot of these people will, you know, buy followers, comments, and likes. You know, these are all non-human scripts, and they trade them in, you know, for hundreds of thousands of dollars or free Prada bags or cars or trips. And then they create this entire false narrative, which does two things. Either it causes anxiety because it makes all the rest of us feel like losers, or two, it gets a lot of copycats out there. You know, now everyone wants to be an influencer.
Right.
It's the number one job people want to do in like grade school. You know, it used to be like doctors or astronauts. Now it's influencer. And it's all based on a false narrative and it's all rotten.
It's all rotten to the core.
Yeah.
And it does. And I think you nailed it when you say it makes people feel bad. That's really that's the rottenness of it. If each one makes you feel bad in a unique and special way. Twitter makes you anxious. At least it makes me anxious. It's all about outrage, upset, and breaking news. And, you know, it makes you anxious in kind of in the same way the 24-hour news channels make you anxious. Instagram is more like Facebook. It makes you anxious because your life just isn't as good. Actually, Instagram makes you feel like your life isn't as good. Facebook combines the worst elements of Twitter and Instagram. In other words, do you still use these platforms?
I use them all, and that's one of the main messages in the book about how to stay zen on social media, as I show there is another path. And I think you can use these platforms in very loving, mindful ways to help move the needle in the right direction.
Sure,
To share awesome things about life. Don't complain, No one wants to hear you complain, I promise.
Yeah.
Just share beautiful things. Because I do think that there is this Pareto distribution of 80-20 where it does, exacerbate 80% of the worst aspects of human nature. And that's just not healthy. And, our man, Yuval Noah Harari, has this salient observation that these algorithms are unconscious. They don't know whether they're serving you up something about the Chicago Bears or anti-vaxxing or flat earthing. They don't care. But if they see you're interacting with it, they'll just show you more of that.
Right.
And this is the opposite of mindfulness. It causes anxiety around fictional constructs that don't really exist.
It turns out any algorithm optimized for engagement is going to take you down a primrose path to hell.
Yeah, there's actual real suffering in the world, famine and war and battle and like sick people in your family. Like, this is real anxiety. People looking at your phone and coming up with these new fictional sufferings that's not real. And that's not how humans are meant to live. You're actually meant to walk around nature a little bit,
A lot.
Yeah. If you ever noticed, if you just are walking through a garden with trees around you or something, like, it's impossible to have anxiety.
Yeah. No, I agree.
This is an anxiety making device.
I think you're exactly right. And it also makes you a misanthrope. It makes you hate people. I realized after, I got off all of the platforms in August, and I felt, besides feel immediately, you feel better. But I realized, and when I go back every once in a while to check a Twitter feed or whatever, I realized it makes me hate people. And honestly, I don't hate people. I love people. When I meet people, when I'm engaged with real life people, I love them. We were talking about Neil Stephenson before the show, because you once drove him for hours or days around Australia, and both of us love Neil Stephenson. Whenever Trey and I get together, we talk about books. And Neil's new book just came out called Fall or Dodge in Hell. I highly recommend it. 900 pages. So bring it. You know what? Bring it on your flight from Sydney to San Francisco.
I will. Good idea.
From Queens. What is it? Queensland.
Queenstown.
Queenstown. Queens. It's so confusing.
Queensland is an area of Australia.
Yeah, it's where you're going. It's Queensland, but you're living in Queenstown and then eventually to San Francisco. By the way, we should, let me back up a little bit. It looks like Trey lives in a hobbit house. In fact, he does. He lives in New Zealand, where everybody lives underground with round doors. You moved there from Austin how many years ago now?
About 8 years ago.
Wow. How's that been?
It's been fantastic. I love it here. I'm sort of a small town, big mountain kind of guy. Mm. I think people are drawn to the ocean or the forest or deserts. I'm a mountain man. And it's beautiful. The Kiwis are nice. They have a pretty relaxed lifestyle. Long meals, a lot of outdoor activity, kind. The food's great. It's safe. I made a lot of good friends here. Yeah, I think it actually, honestly, has been tough on my family, tough on my wife, because I do travel a lot.
You're gone a lot. Yeah, 6 months a year, you told me now.
Yeah, so there's actual possible changes coming in that situation, which is causing some real-world anxiety.
I'm sorry to hear
about
that. Yeah.
As with all that sort of stuff, I think you just go into it with love and everything works out. And
How old are the girls now?
I have three kids, 18-year-old boy. It's kind of his own machine now.
Yeah. He's out in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what it's like.
Is he going to stay in New Zealand, you think?
Oh yeah. I'll be here forever.
And he will be too. He won't go
with him. Don't know. I mean, what do you know at 18?
You don't know.
Honestly.
You don't know. Yeah.
But he's got a few options. He can stay here, go back to Austin. Don't know.
18-year-old boy. He was 10 when you moved. And then the girls were younger, so they didn't really probably.
Yeah. The two girls, they're 13 and 10. Their names are Search and Destroy. They're awesome. I love those girls. I'll do anything for you. I got a great relationship with those.
I know.
With those little I know. Tigers.
That's nice. So you love New Zealand. Mm. They came with you. Your wife going to go back, you think?
Well, she has a lot of options. She might stay here. She has a lot of friends here. She's also thinking about going back to Austin. She has some family there, and she kind of wants to go back to school and
it's
do some
hard.
Things.
It's hard to relocate to a whole, not only a whole new area, but a whole new country and even a whole new hemisphere.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the easiest person to be married to. I'm traveling 4 to 6 months a year. I'm gone.
Is that something you need to do for your photography?
Well, that's a great question. Technically, no. I love it. I love it. And I love the constant stimulation. I enjoy traveling and meeting different people, being with different cultures, creating art, meeting with art collectors. It's really helped me to grow. I've ended up like really getting into consciousness and mindfulness. And I think Burning Man kind of helped me along these paths. So, I've definitely changed a lot in the last, 11, 12 years. I'm kind of really liking this path that I'm on, I don't know what life's about, man, but I'm figuring it out. I'm not afraid. I have an open heart. I'm very vulnerable. I'm more full of love than ever. And it's just kind of a wild, interesting ride. And I do find the right things happen to you at the right time. The right people show up in your life at the right time. Like Leo showed up in my life when Leo needed to.
I needed you. That's what I needed. I'm showing some of your pictures. If you go to stuckincustoms.com, that's Trey's travel site. And I'm showing some of your Burning Man images, which are easily the best Burning Man images anywhere. They're really worth seeing. You can link to his portfolio from Stuck in Customs. But you also have TreyRatcliffe.com, where you have your artist's portfolio and you could buy images as well. And I'm very proud to hang a few of Trey's images, some of my favorites in my house. I just love your images. You became known as a landscape photographer, but you do a lot of portraiture now too. Is that something that's changed over time?
I shoot anything that's beautiful and interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think there's not a lot of difference in the vibration of a beautiful landscape and the vibration of a beautiful human. And beautiful, I don't mean they have to have like perfect DNA and cheekbones or whatever. Like, I think everyone is beautiful in their own way, especially in the eyes.
Right.
So, I love street photography, especially in Japan or anywhere.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time in Japan. Yeah. You made me love Japan. And once I got to Japan, I understand why you love Japan. It's just amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, it's a great place there because, people, I think one thing I like about Burning Man is that people are just comfortable with their own sense of self-expression. I don't know how to pose people, but you can tell when people are kind of doing what they're meant to be doing. Nice. And there's sort of a calmness and a serenity there. And I do my best to try to capture that. It's sort of a fun challenge for me.
I've always loved your landscape photography. I'm really enjoying your portraiture. And I guess most of all, your travel photography, because like this is one of the best images in history. This is a Chinese fisherman in, I would guess Guilin or somewhere around.
Guilin.
Yeah. And right. just incredible images. Now, this example is, and I guess that's Burning Man, I can't tell. One looks at it and goes, oh, he's a heavy Photoshop user. is that the case? What do you don't treat your pictures as journalistic entities that can't be modified?
No, not at all. I'm a big fan of post processing.
Just the starting point.
Yeah, I think the use of artifice in your craft is noble, and some photographers will really manipulate the light before they take the photo. You know, they'll use gels and flashes and all this kind of stuff, and they'll kind of make it different and they'll take the photo. And to them, that's okay.
Right.
I change the light afterwards.
Yeah, why not?
It's an arbitrary time when you're changing the light. Yeah. Why is one okay and one not?
Because one was pre-digital and one is post-digital.
Yeah.
People are uncomfortable with the idea of digital manipulation.
And you can be so much more creative in post than you can in pre, because there's so many great tools nowadays. And I think that all cameras are pretty good. Honestly, I could use my mobile phone, my Pixel, to grab a good photo, and I could just manipulate that just as good as a big old DSLR. And now with all these tools, you can overlay your own personality or how you're feeling at the time or the story of you. You can overlay that onto the photo, and then it becomes completely unique. Like, right? No one else would create that same kind of creation.
Even if they were at the same place, the same time, and snapped the same photo, it's something different. The other problem, of course, with photography is it never matches what you see. It's an always, you know, however good your camera is, it's an approximation of what your sensorium is experiencing. So you're trying to make it, more like what you felt and saw?
Absolutely. Like from the very first time I took a photo 12 or 13 years ago, I had a decent DSLR and I was in Kuala Lumpur and it was this beautiful sunset. And I looked at my final photo and it totally sucked.
Yeah.
And it made me angry. I was like, what's going on?
Sunset
and I
didn't know. Photos are never as good as the sunset was ever.
So I really started thinking about like the retina versus the sensor and the retinex, which, you know, connects the retina and your prefrontal cortex with where you, like, what's going on? How does this, because your brain doesn't store photos like an iPad stores photos. There's this whole neural network of like how you were feeling at the time, who you were with, were you holding someone's hand, what were you smelling, were you full? Like, so there's this whole like network. It's not just a JPEG. It's all human memory tied together in a direct and secondary way. So I think by post-processing photos, you shake up people's brains a little bit. And they're like, what's going on? You know, why does this look different? And as they start to look at this piece, they start tying together disparate parts of their own mind. And the photo becomes as much theirs as yours.
Yeah. Now, one of the things people sometimes criticize you for is you were the first person to ever say the word or the letters HDR to me. And sometimes people criticize you for overemphasizing high dynamic range. Although I use the tool you worked with Skylum on, Aurora HDR, religiously. Before that, the tool you had recommended before that, I used religiously. And you get some amazing images with it. What do you say to the people who say, oh, too much HDR?
Oh, you know, fuck those guys. I don't care.
That's the answer. Correct answer.
I've got a multi-layered answer. One, I don't really listen to any criticism. And I think this is good advice for anyone, any creativity endeavor. Don't listen to the bad stuff. And also just don't even listen to the good stuff, right? You can notice it, right? Like the way a flower might notice rain. But you just keep growing because you're a flower, right? And so there's two aspects to it. I do notice when people are very hateful and mean and destructive. Of course, this says much more about them and what they're going through than me or my own creativity. You know, I think it's fine. So many people find time to be openly destructive in a creative art form. I find that to be unusual. But something else happens. I do take it in, right? And what they don't know, what the haters don't know, is that it kind of feeds this little white ball core of hate, like just somewhere in one of my chakras. Like it's just like burning, like it was pure white energy. And then I kind of release that energy with like love and creativity. So they don't really understand that they're like feeding me even more.
Aren't you amazing?
And I'm not coming back with negativity. I'm coming back with something much more powerful, with positivity and love.
I love that. That's wonderful. I wish I could do that. No, a lot of times photography, you know, you see it again and again. Post your pictures on Flickr and soak in the criticism. Get people to comment. That's how you learn. But I think you come from a point of view that what you should be working on is developing the artistic soul within you, not worrying about what people outside of you say.
Yeah, I'll give you the little short 90-second version of my path on this stuff about this kind of carving out of my soul for photography. Right when I got my camera, I started going to Iceland quite a bit. Went 5 summers in a row. I was walking around. I wouldn't see anybody. I was listening to music, and I was being super present. I was being very mindful. I could feel my feet sinking into the tundra with every step. I was taking photos, and I was like, wow, this is really pleasant. You know, I didn't know anything about mindfulness or presence, but like, I wasn't worried about the future. I wasn't vexed about the past. I was just there, just walking my camera in nature. I was like, wow, there's something going on. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, a friend invited me to a yoga meditation hiking retreat here in New Zealand called Aroha. And then he goes, hey, Trey, you should read this book. I was like, okay. And it was A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And he's talking about, you know, the removal of the ego, being present, being mindful, consciousness. And I was like, wow, this is a thing. I didn't realize that this was an actual thing that. And so he was able to put like an intellectual scaffolding around what I was already going through. And that kind of sped me down this path. And now I know that the greatest creative gift anyone can give to themselves is the complete dissolution of the ego. Like, as soon as you stop taking yourself seriously, you're not worried about what anyone else says. And you can channel a lot of extra energy you have because you're not spending half your day being bothered by things that get stuck on this fictional construct that your ego has created. And you only have so many cycles every day. And so if you can use all those cycles with creativity and love and helping people, this is the best way to be. And I'm happier than ever. I don't complain. I'm not bothered by things. And I look around and I see people that complain and are bothered and just always up in arms about stuff. They don't have much energy left over to do the most important things in life.
We'll be back with more of our show in just a bit, but I just want to make a little plea to all of you who listen to this podcast. We put a lot of effort into it. It takes a team of hosts, producers, editors, engineers, and support staff to get our content out. We're free. We're ad-supported. But the easiest thing you can do to help support us in our efforts at TWIT is subscribing. Subscribe to this podcast and any of the TWIT podcasts you listen to regularly. You could do it in any of your podcast programs, or just go to twit.tv/subscribe and we'll tell you how to do it. Thank you for your support. And now, on with the show. Trey Ratcliffe is our guest. He is a lover of life and a deep and profound person and a great artist. I might be misunderstanding what's behind you. It looks like there's paintbrushes. Do you paint?
No, I don't paint. I draw a little bit.
Okay. So your art is all done in the camera.
Yeah, mostly camera. A little bit of digital painting. I'm working on a few short films. That could be interesting.
Fun.
I've been combining quadcopter footage with the music of Hans Zimmer and the words of Alan Watts. So these have been fun.
Love Alan Watts. And, of course, Hans Zimmer, and I know you and Hans Zimmer have become friends.
Got to be buddies over the years.
I think great artists recognize other artists or the soul of other artists. And, you know, one of my favorite pictures, when Anthony Bourdain died, I thought of you because one of my favorite pictures of yours is a picture of Anthony Bourdain. And he reminds me of you a little bit in his lust for life, his joy, his love of travel. Mm. I guess in a way he's a cautionary tale for us because he must have also been very unhappy. Do you have any memories of him?
Yeah, such a sweet guy. Oh, I'll give you two memories. I'll start with a sad one and then a happy one. He's a real intellectual, and you know, I'm not really a good interviewer like you are, but sometimes I get cool people on camera. We just kind of have a little conversation. I guess that's what like this is like. Anyway, so like before and after camera, we were on. He would just talk about all kinds of stuff. He knew everything about photography and film and old film. And like he taught me a bunch of stuff and just a really nice, super engaging guy. And I think that's what I've noticed this aspect of many people, like they get really into the details that almost nobody else would care about.
That's what I think defines a geek is a person who's passionate about something so much so that they're just they just get into it. And it doesn't have to be technology, whatever it is. And those are the people I most identify with. So I think it's interesting.
And so, I think intellectuals like him can tend to be nihilists, you know, get into nihilism, where you just think everything is, I hate everyone, everything.
It's hard not to think that when you look around. And Twitter and Instagram and Facebook ain't helping.
Yeah, and I went through a short nihilistic phase for 3 or 4 months.
You're an optimist, though. No, you're a positive guy.
Well, it sent me down this rabbit hole. Like, what is the opposite of nihilism? Because it's not optimism anything. But I did find this Greek philosopher who discovered that the antidote to nihilism is creativity.
Ah.
And so I find as long as I create something every day, it keeps me from going into a nihilistic hole. Now, he was creating all the time, so I wonder what happened.
Tony was so full of life. I wish I'd met him. I really only got to know his stuff after he passed away. And I felt like this is a kindred spirit. I read all his books. I watched as many of the shows as I could. I thought, this is a kindred spirit. Yeah. I'm so sad I did not know him. He's almost exactly my age. Very similar life background. And I felt a huge loss. But at least we have his writing. I mean, amazing writer.
Actually, the first time I met him, it was down in Grand Cayman Islands.
I know.
Thing called Cayman Cookout, where they have a...
It looks like that's where this picture's from, is the Cayman Cookout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I ended up sitting with all these great chefs at dinner one night.
I want to live your life. God.
I was just lucky. And I was sitting right by him, or kind of chatting or whatever, and then the waitress is coming around. It's one of the nicest restaurants in the world. And like, I'm nervous about what to order. I don't want to order the wrong thing.
Yeah, in front of Anthony Bourdain. Yeah.
Right. So, and luckily they went to Anthony first. And she leaned in. Luckily, it was on my side, so I could hear what was going on. I was like, what's he going to order? What's he going to order? And then so she goes through the specials and all that stuff. And he goes, I'd like a cheeseburger and fries, please.
That was Tony, because he was unpretentious. Yeah.
Yeah. What's a cheeseburger? It's a regular dude.
It's a dude.
I said, I'll have what he's having.
Yeah, that's the right answer, by the way, anytime you're sitting with Anthony Bourdain. I'll have what he's having. It may have worms in it. It may have strange things in it, but do it. That's great. There's a picture in the book, by the way, How to Fake Your Way into Getting Rich on Instagram. Under the Influence is the name of it. There's a picture in it, and it to me, it actually encapsulated everything I find wrong with this era we're in, of James Franco. And you can't see James Franco because he's surrounded by people who aren't looking at him either. They're turned away from him, taking selfies of themselves with James Franco. And it is, in a nutshell, everything I see all the time. You go to a concert nowadays, nobody's even watching the show. They're facing away and saying, see, friends, I'm having a great life. And it just makes me nuts. Not to mention
the fact that... No, I think that's why I put that in the subtitle, Mass Delusional Behavior.
Yeah.
We've never... You know, it's really come on strong in the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think it's really, I'm trying to figure out what it is. And I did a little research. Have you heard of this? You know, the Dunbar 150?
The 150 people, they're only a number of people that you could actually know, really know. Yeah. Which, by the way, I think is a way high number, but okay.
Yeah. Right. And it comes from 99% of our ancestry when we live in a village with about 150 people and our brain is hardwired to remember 50 people.
Yeah.
But now social networks, and also back then, by the way, you had to like be in good standing with those 150 people.
Right.
Like they would check in.
Right.
You know, you couldn't if you wronged a bunch of people, they would like kick you out or put you out for a while until you were a good person to come back.
And
you
could be pretty much sure that at least half of them hate your guts. But you can't, or you hate them maybe, but you gotta live with them. That's the tribe.
You gotta be nice.
Yeah.
Gotta be nice.
Gotta be nice.
And you're always kind of peacocking is the right word, but you're always want to make sure those 150 people know that you're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to be a good person, whatever.
Peacocking.
Okay. But now we're artificially connected to a lot more than 150 people.
Right.
Many hundreds or thousands. So whereas before you generally need the approval of about 150 people, now you're still hardwired to need the approval of everyone that sees you. So now people think they need the approval of absolute strangers who will never have any material, emotional, or spiritual impact on their lives. And I think this is like a bug in the human software that when we combine it with a phone,
the worst.
Yeah.
Look at this. This is a great picture, similar to the Franco picture. This is a kid with the Queen of England. He's getting a selfie. She's, as you point out, baffled. But the worst part is the kid looks at the selfie, says, "Nah, I want another one." He takes another one. What the hell is wrong with people? Anyway, I think the message is clear. Influencer fraud, selfies, anxiety, ego, and mass delusional behavior. But as fun as this book is, because you've got so many examples of all of this, is it more than just look how screwed up people are?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that, but it's not just a status of strange human affairs. I mostly want to just crack the door a little bit on mindfulness and show people that there is another path.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a secret agenda in this book.
Yeah, and I also, you know, you and I know these things because we live in these worlds of social media and everything. By the way, you know, I quote you in the book about leaving social media and people like Om Malik and stuff, and I say, like, it's sad when you guys get off because it's almost like two little blips of light leaving the universe.
I feel like, first of all, I have not left the universe. I do 20 hours of podcasting a week.
Right.
So there's plenty of me, more than enough of me to go around. But I also feel like you really owe it to the people who are in your physical environment more than you do the internet, right? Or no, you disagree? Do we have an obligation?
Well, it's a good question. Where you have to look at the medium of communication, and like a lot of people do look at that news feed, you know, they just scroll through there. And if in that slot machine, if they can get more positivity, it's good.
Maybe we could make it a better place instead of abandoning it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want people to know there's another path. And I think it's just sometimes if you're recognizing irrational behavior in other people, you think like, oh, maybe I don't want to be like that. And I think just like recognizing it for a while, that's a good first step. And then realizing that these are not mindful activities. They're feeding this ego, which is a thing that you can just get around. In fact, it will make your life easier if you can get around it. Just open the door a little bit on that idea and help people along. Get them out of this undue suffering. Because when they get out of their own suffering, they can start to, you know, love themselves more. And as they do that, they can love other people more and make the world a better place. It's a little bit of a tough world, and I'm quite harsh on these algorithms. As you know, they're designed to keep you on the screen as long as possible. They have such power, these platforms, to make the world a better place, to improve the human condition.
Yeah.
And so they're just not doing it. Have you seen episode 2 of the new season of Black Mirror yet?
No, I'm saving it. I can't wait, though. You talk a lot about Black Mirror right at the beginning, in fact, of the book, because there's that episode. Maybe this was in season 2, the episode of Social Credit episode. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, no, I do mention that one in the book, but I'm talking about the new season, season 5.
Yeah.
It just came out with 3 episodes. Episode 2 is about social media. I won't ruin it.
Okay, good. I'll have something to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, people often refer to this Social Credit episode because it ends so badly. And we're headed right into that world. I mean, China's already halfway there. It's a scary thing. I think Trey's putting a little more love back in the world. So, okay, I will grant you that maybe we do have a little duty to try to make these dumpster fires surrounding us, try to put out the fire a little bit. Instead of just running away, screaming.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot to do that. Trey Ratcliffe is my guest. The book is Under the Influence, How to Fake Your Way into Getting Rich on Instagram. Stress, influencer fraud, selfies, anxiety, ego, and mass delusional behavior. And you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Trey's site, TreyRatcliffe.com or StuckInCustoms.com. And it's actually a fun read because it's just full of the most awful behavior ever. I mean, just unbelievable. Trey Ratcliffe, I can't, I know and I shouldn't, but I've got to, because everybody will say, you didn't ask Trey, what are you shooting these days?
Right. I am shooting with the Sony a7R Mark III.
Nice camera. Nice camera.
I'm not shooting with that. I'm shooting with my Pixel 3.
Nice. I love it. It's great, isn't it?
Great camera.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I'm also really enjoying I have this camera. I'm sure you know about it. It's the Insta 360 1X.
Yeah, it's like a Polaroid.
No, it's the 360 camera. It shoots in 5.7K.
Oh.
And it's small. It's just got a lens on each side that shoots 180. Yeah, yeah. And it's on a stick, and then it erases the stick.
Oh, I forgot about this. Yes. See, I got the new Ricoh Theta Z1, which looks a little bit like this.
But all right.
I always think I'll be doing these 360s, and I never do. But
I thought the same thing with
drones. I bought every drone, and unfortunately or unfortunately, I kept crashing them, so I've just decided not to buy them anymore. But I look at your drone photography and your 360 photography, and I go, that's good.
Well, inspired by you, I started doing this thing. I've only done 9 or 10. But I hold out this camera in front of me while I'm walking and talking with interesting people.
That's a good idea.
I recently walked the Camino de Santiago with Kevin Kelly.
Oh, I love Kevin, yeah.
And so we would come with a topic to talk about, and then I would just hold the camera in front of us, and we would be walking through the woods.
And you could see what they're seeing and look back and see what they're talking about, and then look out again and see the view. That's
fun. If you get tired of looking at us, which doesn't take too long, you can spin it around and look at the beautiful woods we're walking through, or look at a mausoleum we're walking past.
Oh, nice.
Kind of hear our footsteps while we're talking. So it's a little bit of it's like a moving podcast in a way.
Where can I see those?
Just Google Trey Ratcliffe, Kevin Kelly.
Okay, that seems like a simple thing. That sounds really cool. I like that idea. What are your recommendations for 360? Like, if somebody wants to do 360?
Well, one thing is definitely to experiment.
Yeah.
And think about also what the final output will be, because you can edit it so it ends up in a 16:9 frame, and you get to choose where that 16:9 frame is.
Do you do that, or do you leave it as is?
I leave it as is so that people can scroll around.
Yeah, I love that.
While we're walking and talking.
I've played with this a little bit on travel. You know, when we went to the Galapagos, I took the old Ricoh with me. Because then I think it's kind of fun. You can capture the whole scene.
Jump ahead a little bit when we're actually walking and talking.
Yeah, look at that. That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a fun way to try it. Because I've noticed that. You know, actually, I'd be interested in your input, because I think almost all podcasting, you're sitting down and in a room and sort of like this intellectual closed situation. But sometimes maybe humans just like walking, and it kind of keeps jarring your brain into new things. And it's
Steve Jobs used to do that. He insisted at job interviews you had to walk with him.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of experimenting with this form and seeing what happened. I think maybe it'll be kind of evergreen whenever we go all VR, AR. I don't know.
Well, see, that's my biggest issue with this is it's right now the playback is you have to put it on YouTube or Facebook and you got to scroll around. I guess if everybody were walking around with visors, it might work. But
yeah, I don't know. The future is unclear.
It is. Tis. Those videos, Trey's 360 podcast also on Stuck on Customs. But as he said, you can Google it and then YouTube has it. So you went mirrorless and I went mirrorless because of you.
Mm.
And, I agree with you. It's a great way to go. Now I'm thinking I want to strip it down to just one light, small camera.
Well, this is my Pixel 3. I can see myself
with
a year and a half, two years, just using this. It's redonk with the night mode.
I know it's amazing.
Focus and, you know, because machine learning in the cloud will be able to do way more than what a Sony or whatever can do inside the camera. So, yeah.
Computational photography is clearly the future. What about post-processing? What's your workflow these days?
Post, I still take stuff into Lightroom to organize it. I have sort of a hate relationship with Adobe.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Yeah.
I mean, interested. Skylum is slowly moving Luminar in the DAM direction, so that it can do a lot of the things Lightroom does with managing your photos as well as editing them.
Right. So I do use Luminar a lot, and I recommend it. I love it, and it's getting a little bit into that management zone right now. It's just sort of directory based.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like it, because I can import in Lightroom, but Luminar picks it all up as well. So you kind of have it in your Lightroom hierarchy, but Luminar can see it and edit it as well.
Right.
So that's kind of nice.
And Luminar has a lot of good, incredible filters, so I love it. I would say about 50% of my photos go into Aurora HDR, which, full disclosure, I did a partnership with Skylum on that one. And I think last year it won Apple's App of the Year, which is pretty exciting. We didn't expect that.
It's an amazing app. And in fact, I'm a mini Trey in the sense that I wish I were Trey. and like you, I love to travel. That's what most of my photography is. But sometimes, I take pictures and I'm very disappointed with them. I was in Barcelona and I had a lot of pictures that, the light wasn't great. And they weren't great pictures. And I put them in Aurora. And how the sky actually quite literally opened up, because some of my pictures, it was just dark and gloomy. And this is a perfect example of the sky literally opening up thanks to Aurora. If you saw the original, you'd say, well, there's nothing there. So I think you're right. I think a good tool can really take, in my case, a lousy photographer and make something out of it.
Like, it looks like the Rapture.
It does. We're on the roof of the old Gothic Cathedral in Barcelona, about to be heavened up, snarfled up by heaven. Tools are important, but the artist's heart is what really matters. I think you would agree on that. How do you keep from getting jaded? I don't know what photographers call it when they get writer's block, but how do you keep from get to that point where you just don't feel like I'm not creative? Do you ever get there?
So there's this research done on people making pots. Okay. This is a good example.
Okay.
They split the class in two, and one half of the class, they said, you guys only need to make one pot for the whole semester and just give us your best pot at the end. Okay. The other half of the group, they had to come in every day and make a new pot. So that's the question, like, which group ended up becoming the better set of potters? Well, inevitably, the ones that had to come make one pot every day, whether or not they felt like it, they ended up making the best pots. Now, there were a few decent pots from the other group, but they had to be very self-motivated and come in. Uh-huh. I'm actually in the make one pot group.
Make a pot a day.
Yeah. And I wait for the muse to visit, right? Because some days I don't feel like creating. I just kind of feel like sitting around under a blanket, having some pita and hummus and watching Netflix. Some days I'm just like a machine and I go out and take hundreds of photos and process a bunch of photos. I really just kind of wait on the mood. I kind of like listen to myself.
Well, that's the opposite of the pot a day then. You do wait for the muse.
Yeah, I'm in the other group.
But oh, you're some not people, You're not in the pot
some
a day.
People, I see. It depends on your brain. Some people really like to have structure, do something every day. Yeah. I am a very unstructured kind of person.
You go with the flow.
Yeah, I go with the flow. And also, I find that doing things outside of the photography world help to inform and inspire inside the photography world. So like I don't read any books about photography, alternate fiction, nonfiction. And I think let's switch back to a book discussion. This is a good one. Because there's two kinds of people that read books. Some people read books so that they can be interesting at dinner parties, right?
Yeah.
Other kind of people like us, we read books so that we're interesting to ourselves. And I think that as you read books so you're more interesting to yourself, you're like, oh, okay. Like, well, I find that interesting. That's kind of cool. And this stuff kind of accidentally informs your photography. It gives you new ideas for collaborations with other kinds of artists or other kinds of people. New ways to filter your photos, new angles, ways to keep yourself uncomfortable. This is a counterintuitive truth of any creative thing, is that the more you become comfortable with being uncomfortable, the easier not just the creative process is, but the easier your entire life is. So I find I need to be constantly stimulated by reading stuff or seeing stuff or hearing stuff. And this helps keep me fresh.
There's a third group. I'm in the third group. We're just trying to distract ourselves from our sad, pathetic lives, hoping it'll be over soon. I feel like a lot of what we do in life is amusing our, in the Neil Postman's phrase, amusing ourselves to death. Right? we're just distracting ourselves until it's over.
Yeah, it's tough because there's a lot of good distractions nowadays.
Distractions have gotten so good that you might not even know that that's what's happening anymore. You might say, life is amazing. I'm enjoying myself. When in fact, really, no. See, that's the nihilist in me. The black nihilist part's coming out there. No, I think it's interesting. It sounds like for you, creativity is a savior.
I think so. You know, before I did photography, I got my camera when I was 35. Now I'm 47.
This always blows me away that this guy, one of the best photographers anybody ever saw, has only been doing it for 13 years. Just what the hell is wrong with everybody else? It's inspiring. You could do this.
Before I did IT stuff, my degree was computer science and math. And
yeah.
So I didn't hate IT and that kind of stuff, but it was sort of like an 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10 life.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I would never turn back. This is a very weird life I've chosen, super uncomfortable, very unknown, but I like it. It's rewarding in all kinds of unusual, unexpected ways.
How do you decide what to do next?
Well, so this year, I've done these things. I do these like photo walk tours and speaking tours. And I started 3 or 4 years ago in the U.S. and then I did Europe and Asia. And we partnered up with the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh,
and they were great partners.
Nice.
And so now we're still part of them, but now we went kind of up a level. Now there's Marriott Luxury, which owns, you know, W Hotel Edition, Ritz-Carlton, JW, all kinds of great stuff. And so, in fact, just in 4 days, we're starting our USA tour, where I'm going to visit, USA Canada tour, where I'm going to visit 10 cities across the US and Canada. And over the next 3 years, I'm going to be doing 40 cities. I'm spending 4 or 5 days per city. I'll be shooting the city all over the place. I'll have my little, not a big team, I just have 2 or 3 people. And one night in each city, I'm doing a speaking event. So if people like this sort of bloviation, there's more where that came from. come on out. We have like a nice room at, you know, different Marriott Luxury locations and, like a little ballroom. So come in, the tickets are cheap. They're only $9. We're not trying to make money. We're just doing crowd control.
Oh, that's really great. That's nice.
And I share photos and kind of inspire people. There's a long Q&A and a mix and mingle.
Go do that. So, $9. Run. Yeah. Do not walk. So, how can people find out where you're going to be? Is that on your website, stuckincustoms.com?
Yeah, just sign up for our newsletter. It's easy to find on our website. We'll let you know.
Get your passport.
Yeah. So anyway, I came up with this idea. I was like, look, I enjoy traveling. There's a lot of places I haven't been. We have a good relationship with this company. I said, let's just team up because it layers nicely on top of my lifestyle.
So
with the Ritz-Carlton thing.
They tell you where you're going to go next.
Well, I make suggestions and then like we kind of collaborate where we're going to go. this one is actually not a social media one. They just want, I give them a few pictures from places that I go, which is easy because I take thousands anyway.
Yeah.
And it makes the travel cheaper and they pay extra cash.
Nice.
So it just seems to be like a nice layering. And then also I own all the rights to my photos, except for the ones that I give to them. But some of them that they, not even their style, I'll put into our fine art collection. And then that's really how we make most of our money, by selling huge prints to collectors.
That's become the business.
Yeah.
And that's at treyratcliffe.com. TreyRatcliffe. No E. treyratcliffe.com. Good. So that's you found a nice lifestyle.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like sometimes you're stuck in the rat race that you have to take more pictures and sell more pictures, or can you relax into it?
Well, I'm pretty relaxed. I'm not stressed. We don't have a lot of, I'm sort of a minimalist, you know, I don't buy a bunch of stuff.
And right.
Just have a small team of about 5-6 people that we need to pay every month. I have enough for the family. Everything's going fine financially. I feel really lucky and full of gratitude.
Good.
We can always do better. Like, I don't really have like an art dealer. So I kind of got to sell stuff myself, which I don't love because I don't like being salesy.
Yeah, you don't strike me as an ambitious person or a marketer or a huckster.
Yeah.
All the things one thinks people have to do to make a living these days.
Yeah, luckily the prints are so expensive that we don't need a lot of collectors.
So there's the tip of the week.
Yeah.
Charge enough so you don't have to hustle.
Yeah, and it's good too because I learned a lot from reading this book called The $16 Million Stuffed Shark, which is there's this contemporary modern artist named Damien Hirst, and he got a great white shark out of the bay in Sydney, and he put it in formaldehyde in this big glass case, and now someone just bought it for $16 million. And the whole book is about like, how is a stuffed shark worth $16 million? It's ridiculous, right? But this is like a New York Times writer, and he did all the investigation about the fine art world, and he makes a very strong case. Like, now I understand. So we kind of went the same way. And now that a lot of my prints have sold out, there's this thing called a secondary market.
Yeah.
So someone might buy a print for $95,000. Now we've sold all three, so they're all gone, no more available. So now when new collectors come in, they have to buy one of the existing ones, and they might buy it for 2 or 3 times as much.
Right.
So the first collector, they get more than their money back, and they were able to enjoy the print on their wall for a few years. And then hopefully, cross my fingers, because they had a nice experience, they'll come back and buy more from a future series. So that's kind of become the business.
Nice. That's awesome. Because I think I talk to a lot. I talk to a lot of photographers. And one of the things I think a lot of photographers feel is like, well, everybody now, thanks to things like the Pixel 3 phone, everybody's a photographer. And and there are so many images in the world. You'll see many of them in Trey's new book, Under the Influence. There's so many images in the world. It's hard as a photographer to make a living anymore.
Oh, it's very difficult. And it's not that there's so many photographers. There's so many good photographers.
Yeah.
If you jump on like 500px, you know, which has...
Amazing.
Every day they have like 100 new photos.
It's discouraging.
I would die to have any of those in my portfolio.
I know. It's discouraging. It makes me not want to take pictures. I have to stop looking at these because I go, well, they don't need my picture of the Eiffel Tower. We've got too many good ones already.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's just about doing something different and having...
Yeah.
Like good storytelling capabilities, having an interesting story, I guess, because people do want to know about the artist. And you can talk about yourself, I think, in a non-egotistic way. And they like very limited edition things that are real.
Real. You have always been real. You've always been honest and genuine and real. And I think it comes through in your photos, too. Ironically, because they're not literal pictures of what you saw, of the camera saw anyway. But they're
also,
more
real. I think it's important to say, Leo, that I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. You know? I know. I figure it out as I go along.
This is why gratitude is always a very important point of view, because honestly, we're all just lucky sons of guns, right?
Aren't we?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel very fortunate, very lucky to know Trey Ratcliffe. I have to say that.
Likewise,
it's always good to catch up. Now you're coming to San Francisco later today, like any minute. And tell me what you're going to be doing. You're going to be doing these Ritz-Carlton Marriott speaks talks.
Actually, I'm in San Francisco to go to some party on the 8th with a bunch of Burning Man friends.
Okay, this is the lifestyle you're talking about in here. The guy's flying 6,000 miles to go to a party.
Yeah, with some good old Burning Man friends, a nice little group of people. But I won't be taking selfies there, though. By the way, there's nothing wrong with quick little selfies. No. Just kind of sharing life. There's, yeah. You know, there's good selfies and bad selfies. So I'm there for a night, and I'm going to go down to L.A. for a few nights to meet with some art collectors. I got a guy that plays for the Rams down there. I'm going to meet with him. He's a photographer, so we're going to take photos. But then the real tour starts on the 11th in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So it's Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, New York, Dallas, New Orleans, Montreal, Toronto, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Boston. Wow. That's for this year.
And are you going to do any public events, photo walks or anything?
We might do a few photo walks. Okay. We'll squeeze them in here or there where they take a lot of time to plan and sometimes they get a little crowded. So there's more that goes into it now because I have to have like a mobile speaker system and a mic. And sometimes we have to get cops to help. So they're more difficult to do nowadays. So
yeah, wow.
And
that's what happens actually, when you're a superstar, man.
Even though people enjoy the photo walks, I think they just enjoy hanging out and talking to me. So that's why we have these more private, intimate events now.
Yeah.
Right. Tell stories and inspire people. Sort of.
Are you sad about Google Plus going away?
Well, sad is the right word. Flummoxed a little bit because they had something cool, you know, and people liked it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it was costing them too much money. I think they had a lot of extra money around.
You were the star. You were the king of Google Plus.
Yeah. And I have this thought that, you know, of course, their goal, I suppose, is to organize the world's information and or build some giant AI, right? Yeah. Which is fine.
To make Skynet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're doing that now by collecting data, map information, all this kind of stuff. And I try to make not that anyone listened to me. I said, like, okay, you have many inputs, right? Well, Google Plus is another interesting input because you can analyze social behavior, analyze social network and see what people are into. Yeah. Like, this could be another tremendous data input.
Well, they knew that. That's why they created. That's how Vic Gundotra convinced the guys at Google to do it. Because this is you're missing out on the social graph. Facebook's getting all that data. You need to do it.
But I think it would be a good data input because it is important to see how humans interact sociologically online. I think that's a valuable thing. They're still getting enough data that they can build an amazing AI.
They don't care.
They didn't need. That would have been a little extra thing, and they wouldn't have been upset, you know, millions of people.
Google's like a Labrador retriever with a squirrel. I mean, they dropped the ball, and what? The reason I'm mostly sad is because my banner image on my Google Plus page was of me and Trey at the photo walk we did many years ago at South by Southwest in Austin.
That one, yeah.
With Lisa Bettany. It was so much fun. Callie Lewis was there, Louia Petrucci. It was so much fun. And now there's nowhere for me to put that image. Do you journal, Trey? Do you do stuff for yourself personally that no one sees?
I have done a lot of writing, and I'm thinking about releasing it. It's mostly been about my psychedelic experiences.
Right. That's the next book.
DMT, and when I recently imbibed the crystallized poison of the Sonoran Desert Toad in the form of 5-MeO-DMT. And so I've been writing about my
spiritual don't try this at home, kids. Okay.
And kind of like that journey and what I've seen.
I'd love to read that. I would love to.
And how it's changed me.
Did you read the Carlos Castaneda books when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Journey to Ixlan and those things.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that's kind of the same journey, I think, a little bit. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really opened my mind more. I think maybe even more loving and more trusting in the universe.
As I travel through life, I've been very fortunate because I get to do shows like this and I get to meet interesting people. There are a handful of people. Maybe it's the Dunbar number. Maybe it's 150. But there are a handful of people who are special. And they have a special way of looking at life that seems to be more real, more honest, more present than others. And Trey is the perfect exemplar of that. He's an inspiration. And if you get to talk to him, seeing his photos is a great start. Reading the new book is a great start. But if you ever get a chance to talk to him in person, you will experience that that positive joy that just radiates over him. It is so good to talk to you again, Trey, and I hope we can talk again soon. Everybody, go buy the book, Under the Influence, How to Fake Your Way Into Getting Rich on Instagram. By the way, would I learn enough to be able to fake my way into getting rich on Instagram from this book?
Yeah, so we kind of start out the book with that. We built a fake account with 110,000 followers, and we bought fake comments that we custom wrote ourselves, bought fake likes. So we show how easy it is.
You can actually do it, and it's a roadmap.
Yeah. We show how to do it.
Always a pleasure, Trey. It's really great to talk to you. I wish you a safe travels to the U.S. and back. Continue your great work. And if you're ever in the Petaluma area, come by and say hi. I'd like to give you a hug.
Thanks, big guy. I love you, man.
Thanks, Trey. I don't know why he keeps calling me big guy. do I remind you? You know somebody in the Rams. That's a big guy. That's a big guy. I'm a medium guy.
Come on, you're a mogul.
A mogul. Giant. Like a bump on a ski slope. I'm a mogul. Trey Ratcliffe, always a thrill. Trey, love to you. You're the greatest. See you soon.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care. The book Under the Influence, Trey Ratcliffe. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it everywhere. But you know what? The best thing to do would be go to TreyRatcliffe.com and buy a $95,000 print. I think your life would be better, honestly. Like that. Isn't that is that Hong Kong? Where is that? That's amazing.
Yeah, that is Hong Kong.
Chiba City or something. That's incredible. Wow. Thank you, Trey. We do triangulation it's kind of all over the place. We did one this morning. We do them usually Fridays about 11:30 a.m. Pacific. That'd be 2:30 Eastern. That'd be 17:30 Trey time. UTC. If you want to watch it live, you can at twit.tv/live or listen live. But most people will do it on demand. And you can easily do that. All the shows are stored carefully, archived in a sealed digital container at twit.tv/TRI. twit.tv/TRI. Or you can subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, and that way you'll get every episode. It's not just me, Jason Howell, Megan Maroney, Denise Howell. We share the duties on triangulation and talk to some of the most interesting people in technology. So kind of stock up on those triangulations next time you have to fly 6,000 miles for a party. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye. So in Stevens's new book, remember, he coined the term metaverse in Snow Crash.
Yeah.
In his new book, his protagonist, who dies in the first chapter, so it's a little bit like Game of Thrones, his protagonist calls the internet the miasma. And he calls the constant noise of email and social media and all that, he calls that the din, which I really like. I'm going to call it the din, too.
It's good in the naming stuff. I spent a month with Neil Stevenson in Australia driving him around.
Oh, my God.
Helping him to research he was researching the sequel to Cryptonomicron.
Which he has yet to write.
Yeah.
I would read that. It's my favorite book of all time.
And by helping him, I mean, all I did was drive the car. I think the only reason he had me along because he knew that I knew how to drive on the left side of the road.
Believe me, I would be happy to get him lunch, to stir his coffee, just to be hang around with him. Is he taciturn?
That's a good way to say it. You know how there's this, you know, Myers-Briggs test? There's 16 squares.
Yeah.
His square is like in another universe.
It's that one way there. Yeah. So interesting. I don't care. He's a, you know, what I've started to realize is you can't judge artists by their day job because they're often reprehensible people.
No, he's a very sweet guy. It took me a while to figure. The first time I met him, he actually made me cry. I went back to my hotel room and I cried for like an hour.
You're easy to make you cry.
I'm a soft target, Leo.
So he made you cry how? What did he do?
Well, okay. So there's this conference called the EG conference. You heard of this thing?
No. Of course, it's I don't get invited to that kind of stuff.
It's like TED, but without, you know, all the Save the Whales people making you feel bad about yourself.
Oh, I'd like to go to that.
It's more the entertainment. It's called the Entertainment Gathering. Anyway.
Oh, nice. TED used to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Groening goes and all these kind of creative people.
Nice.
So I was speaking there, and so was Neil. And I spotted him. I espied him down in the front row. Yeah. And I was with my wife. Oh, I go, nice. Oh my God, there's Stevenson. He's like a hero. Gotta go talk to him.
Yeah.
And then during one of those little breakout sessions, you know, where you have like shrimp cocktail and mingle.
Right.
He was there.
Nice.
Standing alone. I was like, I'm gonna go over there. And you know, I feel like I know how to talk to famous people. Because I'm not famous like him, but people come up to me all the time and they're really nervous or they're awkward. And
yeah,
like,
you know, famous people, and you're famous to people who know who you are. Yeah.
So I walked up to him in a pretty casual way. I said, Mr. Stevenson, I want you to know that I have read all your books, but man, I love them. You've really impacted my life, and I think you've actually changed the way my brain works a little bit.
That's true for me. You. That's a great thing to say. I think that's so great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was very awkward. He was just kind of like backing away and like trying to get out of the situation and like looking around like for some sort of escape hatch.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he said, like, I don't really even remember what he said, but it wasn't rude. It was just like, I didn't know how to react. I just felt really, I felt like a total loser. You know, I'm full of self-doubt anyway. And all it did is like confirm my pure losertude. I feel like, oh man, if this guy who kind of knows what cool is, if he thinks I'm a loser, then man, I've really messed up this life. I need a reboot. And then I went back to my room, and I used to write all my newsletters myself. Now I have some help. And I wrote a newsletter to everybody. I said, guys, you know, come up to me anytime. I told him what happened. I said, I hope I never make any of you guys cry.
So he made you cry that way. He didn't. I thought. See, this is how like highly I put you on the spiritual plane. I thought he said something really deep, and you thought about it and you cried. he broke your heart. What an ass. But later, you drove him around Australia.
Well, we got to be friends over the next. It took about 6 months or 9 months. It's a longer story. It's still all funny, but I'll tell you another time.